Senate Intelligence Committee grills Robert Gates about the CIA's role in the Iran-Contra arms affair. But senators delayed their vote on his nomination as CIA director until they can read the report of the Tower Commission due out next week. Sources say that report will be sharply critical of several administration officials, perhaps critical enough to cost some officials their jobs or Robert Gates his chance to head the CIA.
Robert Gates, President Reagan's choice to replace William Casey as Director of Central Intelligence, is widely regarded as a sharp, intelligent, and articulate career man who is a good choice for the job now.
I think a career professional will more and more say to a president, sir, that's a mistake. That is a big mistake.
I happen to believe that Bob Gates, who is the Deputy Director of the acting DCI, is the best candidate that's available. He isn't a glamorous name at this point in time, but he's a very competent professional.
At 43, Gates has worked for the CIA 20 years, spending six of them working for the National Security Council. He rose through the ranks as an intelligence analyst, primarily of Soviet affairs.
He's had no experience in running clandestine operations.
Conservatives worried Gates would abandon CIA-run covert operations designed to advance the Reagan doctrine with aid to anti-communists in such countries as Angola, Mozambique, Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Southeast Asia, and Central America. As one senator put it,
he's had no practical experience in spying, no practical experience in covert operations, no practical experience in the operational side of the CIA. It's like putting a librarian in charge of the CIA. That's overstating my case a little bit, but I think it makes the point.
Although Gates himself has had no experience in covert operations, he has said that he believes in using them when necessary. The conservatives apparently want a CIA chief who is expert in covert operations, even though those activities account for less than 10% of the agency's budget. Gates has promised to appoint a deputy who has had covert operations experience.
So what you're telling us is we can't rely on you as director of the Central Intelligence Agency under the existing law to tell us anything that's illegal going on in the National Security Council, even when it comes to your attention.
These important confirmation hearings this morning in a period of controversy and confusion about American foreign policy and its implementation. Our goal must be to learn constructive lessons from the mistakes which have been made. Mr. Gates, we welcome you to these confirmation hearings, and I would ask if you would now stand and raise your right hand and be sworn to give testimony before the committee.
Robert Gates told the committee the CIA had made many a mistake in the Iran-Contra affair.
Let me acknowledge for the record that there were shortcomings in CIA's participation in the Iran project. Our officers violated our own internal regulations in facilitating the flight in November 1985. We did not communicate well enough internally about what was going on. We should have protested more vigorously our involvement in an operation where there were significant elements unknown to us and where we mistrusted key figures. We tolerated ground rules suggested by others that excluded some of our own experts, and we accepted a highly unusual funding mechanism. I also believe the CIA made an error in not pressing to reverse the directive to withhold prior notification once the operation began to string out after mid-February 1986. The entire undertaking was a unique activity that we are all determined not to repeat.
But that was with hindsight. At the time the whole affair was unraveling last fall, he thought differently. If he saw any lesson in the Iran-Contra scandal, it was that Congress should be notified more quickly about covert operations, not by mistake and not 14 months after the fact, as in this case.
My view is, and my position is, and I have discussed this at the White House, I would not recommend to the president withholding prior notification under any except the most extreme circumstances, and then only for a period of several days. And it seems to me beyond that point, I believe I would strongly urge that the Congress be notified.
He said he would try to stop that from happening again.
But I would also add that if I felt the prolongation of the withholding of prior notification reached a point where it threatened a relationship of trust between the intelligence community and the oversight committees of the Congress, that I would contemplate resignation under those circumstances.
Many senators were not happy with the testimony.
You were basically supporting the National Security Council. Your folks were supporting it. I'm astounded that you don't believe that the National Security Council, when they're carrying out what is obviously an intelligence activity, comes under the purview of the law.
Senator, it seemed to me that the activity that they were undertaking was primarily a diplomatic initiative for which we were providing operational support.
Sending guns to Iran and ammunition and tow missiles is a diplomatic activity? State Department's going to have to get a different kind of uniform if that's the case. So what you're telling us is we can't rely on you as director of the Central Intelligence Agency under the existing law to tell us anything that's illegal going on in the National Security Council, even when it comes to your attention. That's what you're saying.
Gates did say he tried to convince William Casey, his boss at the time, to stop the White House's operation.
I urged the director to get the memorandum to Admiral Poindexter as quickly as possible. We met with Poindexter on the next day, October 15th. We gave him the memorandum and had him read it in our presence. He kept it. As I recall, the ensuing conversation focused on the security problem. We repeated our concern that the project was out of control and should be made public, and the director suggested that the admiral consult White House counsel to ensure that all the NSC's activities were proper.
The committee had hoped to finish with Gates in one session. It couldn't. So back he comes for another go.
I couldn't see over.
Robert Gates was accused of dodging responsibility when he first learned money from sale of arms to Iran might be going to Contras.
So you basically passed the buck to Poindexter.
Now you can call that passing the buck. I call it trying to get it into the hands of those who are better prepared to evaluate the information that we had gotten.
Later, Bradley asked Gates what he would do now if he discovered a covert operation that the committee had not known about.
Well, the first thing I would do would be to hop in a car and come up here.
Well, you're learning, Mr. Gates.
Nobody ever accused me of being slow, Senator.
Senator Arlen Specter accused Gates of coming close to lying over his role in helping prepare testimony for William Casey before the Senate Intelligence Committee last November.
You were asked the question, did you personally participate in the drafting of the testimony? And you said, no, you didn't personally participate. But that's a shading which I find to have an element of dissembling.
Specter said Casey's testimony was skimpy, scampy, and misleading. The committee leadership was pleased with the hearing.
It's perhaps difficult for us to tell people, not only our constituents, but people in other countries, why are you making such a big fuss over what is seemingly trivial to them? Because it's not so much this particular issue, whether you agree about the military equipment going to Iran, which is a serious matter in my judgment, or whether funds were diverted to the Contras. It's the issue about the adherence to the rule of law.
But the leadership said Gates will have to come back for more testimony later. Elsewhere on Capitol Hill, the Senate Government Operations Committee heard Comptroller General Charles Boucher argue that his office should be allowed to audit CIA financial records.
I think you always have the positive possibility that people know that their actions are going to be reviewed by an external group, such as GAO, that they will think twice about the actions that they will take.
Gates said he would provide such financial information to the Intelligence Oversight Committee only. The committee is clearly nervous about Gates' appointment, so it will hold off on a vote to confirm him until after the Tower Commission issues its report late next week. The senators have found no smoking gun on Gates. They want to make sure that no one else does either.
There were several developments in the Iran-Contra arms investigation this past week. Among them, reports that the Iran arms deal and Contra supply operations run out of the White House were just small parts of a larger covert operation called Project Democracy.
Befitting its stirring name, Project Democracy raided a White House ceremony when it was launched in 1983.
The establishment of the National Endowment goes right to the heart of America's faith in democratic ideals and institutions. It offers hope to people everywhere.
Project Democracy, designed to provide American support for democratic institutions abroad. Operating from these Washington offices as the National Endowment for Democracy, the program openly sent money and speakers to foreign publishers, labor unions, and other institutions that our government decided to encourage.
But the New York Times now reports that the Democracy program had a secret side that was run from the White House basement. The Times based its account on interviews with many present and former government officials. In January 1983, Mr. Reagan reportedly ordered the National Security Council to coordinate government efforts for Project Democracy. Later that year, National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane put the project in the hands of his aide, Oliver North. Officials say the project grew out of concern that the State Department wasn't strongly enough behind the administration's anti-communist policies. The Times says Project Democracy grew into a rival apparatus with its own communications, transport, secret envoys, and bank accounts. And when Congress banned military aid to the Nicaraguan Contras in 1984, the Democracy apparatus reportedly stepped in. Congressional investigators say it kept the Contras in business with money, equipment, and other aid. And 2 years later, it reportedly was used to ship arms to Iran. Officials say the Tower Commission, now investigating the National Security Council, has been unable to prove that President Reagan expressly approved covert actions under Project Democracy. The Times says those actions were so secret, even some of North's own colleagues were left in the dark.
The head of the public program says he knew nothing about the reportedly secret parallel operation.
I don't know Ollie North. I've never talked to him. I've never even laid eyes on him. And I don't know what he was doing, and I assume that whatever he was doing will come out in the course of the investigation.
But sources contend that Project Democracy ultimately encompassed the Iran arms shipment and the diversion of profits to the Nicaraguan Contras. Project Democracy even provided a vessel last May when Colonel North asked Texas businessman H. Ross Perot to put up the money for what turned out to be an unsuccessful attempt to ransom the American hostages in Lebanon.
We'd like to have the rest of the world have our legal system, our system of justice, and our philosophical and cultural systems. They don't. In the Middle East, this is eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth country. And when you're trying to get something done over there, you've got to do things in an unconventional way, and that would include paying for information, paying ransom, et cetera, et cetera.
House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Dante Fassell is a member of Project Democracy's advisory board. He claims no knowledge of the covert operation, but argues that the president must bear responsibility.
The string of command runs to the president. It runs from the president. It was his policy.
When it was announced, there were fears that Project Democracy would establish a framework for ill-advised covert action. From the beginning, there were assurances that those worries were unfounded, assurances that many feel will be mocked when the investigations are completed.
I think there's a growing feeling that regardless of your feeling about the Contras, that they don't have the competence, the efficiency, the honesty, the military capability of conducting a fight. It's just a waste of money.
When Adolfo Calero resigned from the leadership of the Contra umbrella group UNO, although the other two top Contra leaders, Arturo Cruz and Alfonso Rabello, decided to stay, even congressional supporters of Contra aid say the discord within UNO hurts their cause.
There's no doubt that it can harm the ability of the administration to get sufficient support for continued funding for the Contras if it appears this coalition is falling apart.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted to cut off aid to the rebels while agreeing to send $300 million in economic aid to Nicaragua's neighbors. This first vote on the Contra since the Democrats took control of Congress was virtually split along party lines.
Well, the message ought to be clear. Contra aid is ending, and that the administration, number one, ought to begin to pursue seriously efforts to support a political and diplomatic solution to the problem.
My own judgment is that immediate termination of all funds for the Contras would be a severe problem, not only for them, but for us with regard to policy in Central America.
In fact, the administration still has time to win more money for the Contras. The bill passed by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee may not come before the full Senate for several weeks, and a resolution blocking the last installment of $100 million approved by Congress last year may not have the votes to survive a presidential veto. So at least in the near future, the Contras may end up winning the battle for some extra aid, but they may lose a bigger fight in the fall, when the administration will ask Congress for another $105 million for the Contras.
At week's end, there was another flurry of news reports containing new revelations about the Iran-Contra arms affair, or information about previously undisclosed covert activities involving some of the affair's major players.
At Bethesda Naval Hospital, former National Security Advisor Robert McFarland stuck to his story and told the Tower Board that President Reagan had authorized Israel to ship U.S.-made arms to Iran in 1985. The board spent 3.5 hours retracing McFarland's earlier accounts. He has been hospitalized since an apparent suicide attempt last week. According to published reports, when the president met first with the Tower Board in January, his account agreed with McFarland. But the reports say that after discussion with Chief of Staff Donald Regan, the president had a different story at a second session February 9th. The president then agreed with Regan's version that the Israelis shipped the arms before the White House was told about it. Senator David Duremberger says the Intelligence Committee found McFarland more convincing than Regan.
All of the evidence would indicate to the contrary, that the president did at least give a conditional okay to going ahead to the Israeli part of the Iran arms transfer in August of 1985. I think the president ought to stick with that. I don't think it hurts him.
But the timing of the president's action is critical to the investigation of independent counsel Lawrence Walsh, who must determine criminal intent. The president did not establish a legal basis for U.S. arms exports to Iran until his January 1986 finding. The Israelis sent U.S. arms to Iran months earlier. Walsh's investigators are also hurrying to question witnesses before the congressional committees can extend immunity. And the independent counsel is encountering delays getting Swiss banking information related to the diversion of funds. The Tower Board, though, will make public a wealth of information next week.
The turmoil at the White House continues. The latest chapter reports that First Lady Nancy Reagan is so miffed at Chief of Staff Donald Regan for his handling of the Iran affair, she's not talking to him.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Not true?
No, not true, and nobody's getting fired.
But reliable sources say Nancy Reagan still wants Regan out. A spokeswoman for the First Lady says Mrs. Reagan will not make any comment on reports she's giving the Chief of Staff the silent treatment, but admits another source, I don't think she's his biggest fan. For Reagan, there was no escaping the obvious question. Does he intend to quit? But the president isn't making any commitments beyond saying he won't fire Reagan.
This is up to him. I have always said that when the people that I've asked to come into government feel that they have to return to private life, that's their business, and I will never try to talk about it.
That may sound like a lukewarm endorsement, but insiders say Reagan continues to enjoy the president's confidence, was the influential force in shaping his recent decision on catastrophic health insurance, and does not intend to quit anytime soon. But when Reagan declared the president fully recovered from his prostate surgery and began pushing for an ambitious travel schedule, he got into fresh trouble with the First Lady. Sources say Mr. Reagan remains on a restricted schedule for now. One well-placed source says all the palace intrigue is beginning to play like a soap opera, and the perception is hurting the president.
All this goes far beyond Washington gossip and power plays. Sources say it has made it difficult to rebuild the White House staff for Reagan's final 2 years, to come up with meaningful new initiatives, or to move beyond the Iran controversy.
that federal agency...
The confirmation vote on Robert Gates as CIA director could well hinge on the contents of the Tower Commission report. If his nomination survives the fallout from the Iran-Contra arms affair, Gates will still face several formidable tasks as he takes over from William Casey.
Under Casey, the CIA was rebuilt, both as an intelligence-gathering organization and as a covert operations organization. At times, the covert operations got out of hand, such as when the CIA mined Nicaragua's harbors. But generally, Gates inherits an organization with an improved reputation and more self-confidence than it has had in years. But Gates does face some formidable problems. For example, reestablishing Congress's confidence in the agency after the Iran-Contra disclosures.
Mr. Gates was there during the whole Contra-Iran affair. Mr. Gates has that information and can defend and present the CIA's case as well as anybody.
Setting up an intelligence operation in the Soviet Union after Edward Lee Howard, a former employee, defected there and compromised the Moscow station's activities. Improving technical intelligence gathering after the setback in satellite launches dealt by the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster last year. In short, the new technocrat director has a tough agenda to tackle. He's got a lot of problems to solve.
The new top spy, the big story this week. This is Don Miller, CNN.